Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome John Hinshaw to the broadcast. John is the Executive Vice President of Technology and Operations at Hewlett-Packard. He oversees company operations, including global information technology, global sales operations, global procurement, global business shared services, global real estate, and global security. John is a member of the company's Executive Council and serves on the Ethics and Compliance Committee. Prior to Hewlett-Packard, John spent 4.5 years at the Boeing Company, most recently leading the Information Solutions Business Unit. He was also Boeing's Chief Information Officer and led their company-wide corporate initiative on information management and information security. Prior to Boeing, John spent 14 years at Verizon, where he served as Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Verizon Wireless. He also held a number of key positions focused on enabling business growth, reducing costs, and improving business productivity. Earlier in his career, John also served as a consultant with Accenture. John is a member of the board of directors at the National Academy Foundation, an organization dedicated to preparing young people for college and career success and fostering partnerships between the business and education communities to provide opportunities to underserved students. John holds a Bachelor of Business Administration in Computer Information Systems from James Madison University. I recently spoke with John in New York City, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as John spoke about his approach to developing IT talent and his relationship with CIOs. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as John discussed how strategy is developed and cascaded through his organization, and how he fosters collaboration across the organizations under his purview, including IT, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. So, John, I thought we'd begin with your role at HP. Mm-hmm. You're the Executive Vice President of Technology and Operations. Mm-hmm. You are a leader reporting directly to the CEO, Meg Whitman. You have the CIO position reporting into you. Mm-hmm. I wonder, beyond that, can you tell us a bit more about the scope of that role and its responsibilities?
Yeah, it's a great role. It's a lot of fun to have the technology function, the IT function, and the CIO role, as you mentioned, and the other key business functions within the company reporting into the group. So they range from shared services, which we call global business services. It's sort of shared services on steroids. It's 500 business processes across the company. It's 18,000 people all over the world. It's everything from payroll to closing the books to marketing collateral to, you know, just about any business process in the company we put together into this global business services group. It's also the real estate organization, so all of our buildings around the world, not only the transactions that occur there, but ensuring that the employees have a great experience, the cafeterias, the gyms, the maintenance on the facilities and all of that. And we have a great strategy there to improve our facilities across the world. It's also the procurement function, so all the indirect procurement, about $22 billion or so in indirect procurement. You know, everything from travel to employee needs to fleet cars, you name it, it all gets bought through that procurement organization worldwide. It's also the security, global security function, which is both physical security and cybersecurity. Functions, so everything from folks that secure our buildings to business continuity planning to anti-counterfeiting, which is an interesting challenge around the world. We have several $1 billion of counterfeit HP goods that show up around the world, and so I've got a team out finding those goods and working with law enforcement to shut that down, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And then it's the sales operations group as well, which is a very interesting component to the technology and operations team. And that's all of the back office work to keep the sales teams going, everything from quote to cash, so getting a quote out to our customers, getting the invoices out, you know, the collections process from our customers, sales compensation for all of our sales reps worldwide. And it's the sales processes, which we've done quite a transformation on on how our sales team actually works and sells every day. So, you know, those functions together make up a pretty exciting group. And then on top of that, we overlay what we call our business process reengineering group, which looks across the company at how can we reengineer how we work today with not only the functions that exist there, but other functions such as supply chain and things like that to make it easier to work at HP, make it easier to sell to our customers, make it easier to buy from HP. So a lot of focus around reengineering also. So the whole organization is approximately 32,000 employees across the world. Large majority of those are spread around the world, and as HP offers products in 170 countries.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And all those areas of responsibility, were they within your group from the outset? Has it been built piece by piece? I mean, in fact, did you have a predecessor in this role, or was this a new role with your joining the firm?
Yeah, this was a brand new role. Okay. There was, previously there was a CIO, but this role was created by Meg Whitman, and so it's brand new. And most of the functions were in the organization when I arrived. The security function and the real estate function were added shortly after I got there.
And how do you think about, with such a diverse set of areas under your purview, how do you think about planning? How do you set objectives that then cascade into each of those organizations? And I'm also curious, as an additional question related to that, how do you stimulate collaboration across those organizations?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great question, because we just spent 2 days together with all of my leaders talking about our FY14 through FY16 strategy. And we've laid out four key objectives for the technology and operations organization. The first I just mentioned is making it easier to buy from HP, to sell for our sales force, and to work at HP. Mm-hmm. So there's several initiatives in each of these groups that delivers that promise. The second is to help the company make the financial plan, back to our discussion earlier on our first quarter results and getting HP back on track. So there's a host of initiatives in every group, not only to keep their own financials where they need to be, but to enable the business to achieve their financial goals. Mm-hmm. The third is to make HP a showcase of HP technology. So predominantly in IT, but in several of the other groups as well, we are using HP both hardware and software products, but also services to improve our internal operations, which are then a showcase to customers as well. So if you're a customer of HP and you want to see any of our software products at scale, we can show you that running at HP. We can show you running, our service management system for 300,000 people across the company. And we can show you running our new Moonshot servers, our new miniaturized ARM and Atom chip servers, running HP.com on them today. So a host of things around there. And the fourth is making our employees successful and making sure they've got the right tools and the right training for what jobs they're going to need in the future. And we've just held an all-employee development day where all 32,000 employees across the world took a day out of their time to focus on their career development, their progression plans, what they needed to do to be ready for the next job, etc. So those are the four key objectives that span across all six functions, and that really brings the team together. And then the other fun part of this job is, having been a CIO before, one of the challenges IT always has is how do you help the other business functions with productivity and with, being more effective in their operations. And historically, most of the demands on IT come directly from the business units. Rarely, if procurement or shared services or real estate or security or sales ops, if they wanted IT work done, they would typically have to get a business unit to sponsor them. It was hard for them to go directly to IT because the business units would usually out-prioritize them for the work. Well, since we're all in one organization now, let's take Global Business Services, Shared Services, for example. They do a lot, these 500 processes, there was a lot of manual work because the work had been taken from a high-cost location to a low-cost location, but never automated. And now that IT and Shared Services are in one group, that automation can occur, and so we can be a lot more productive there. Another example would be sales operations. So sales operations has a lot of back office work that needed to be done. The shared services group can now help that sales operations team get their work done smarter, faster through the shared services group. That connection didn't exist before. Another example would be procurement. The procurement tools that we had at HP were very antiquated, 10, 15-year-old tools, very hard to use. When you marry IT up with procurement now, we're implementing everything from DocuSign to Fieldglass, a lot of new cloud-based tools, so the procurement gets done a lot faster. So that's the one of the fun parts about the job is helping these other traditional business functions move a lot faster with the way they take care of HP employees and customers because you've married that up with IT.
That's great. A really good example. I was interested also to see that when you were at Boeing, you were the CIO for a time, and then you became the head of information services business unit of the organization.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that, how the purview of information services was similar or dissimilar to what you're doing now? It sounds as though it's a growth from the CIO role and expansion of responsibilities.
Right.
How did the logic of that occur to you and to your colleagues to grow a set of responsibilities?
Yeah, that was pretty exciting, and you know, and I really enjoyed the CIO role at Boeing, and part of that role is I had a very large IT organization that would farm out some of the IT resources to various business units that were selling IT services from Boeing. Now, you don't think of Boeing as an IT services company typically, but if you think about all the technology that's on an airplane and an airline's ability to manage all of that technology, they need IT help, and Boeing offers those services. So I would loan out my internal IT guys to the business units to go help our customers, and that was true on the commercial airplane side as well as on the defense side. A lot of the defense work that Boeing does is in the information services, information solutions area, whether it's helping a satellite company with their IT, or it's helping the Department of Defense in the US, or Ministry of Defense in the UK with a project. In fact, HP and Boeing are on a big joint project for the Ministry of Defense today. Of the IT resources that I had, about 20% of those at one time or another were loaned out to the business units. And I got very involved in a lot of those projects, so not just making internal IT better, but ensuring that the resources that were deployed to service Boeing's customers were also doing well. And I think that naturally led to a lot of discussion around, well, could we grow that information services, or we call it information solutions, business at Boeing? And so one day I got a call from Jim McNerney, the chairman, to come chat with him, and he said, hey, great job as a CIO. I also built a great team there, and so Kim Hammonds, who you just referenced, was ready to step up into the job, and then I moved over to take over the information solutions business, which is really a lot of fun because it was not just running a business, but we had also acquired a bunch of small companies, and there was a cybersecurity service in there, and it was a good time. And I think it is a great example of a CIO being able to move in and run a P&L. You know, that isn't necessarily possible in every company. I think it's easier in a technology type company, and again, when you think of Boeing, you think of them as maybe an engineering company, but they're also very much into technology services. So that was somewhat logical from that perspective.
Yeah, that makes sense. What is it about your background, would you say, as well as your experience, I guess most relevantly at Boeing, since in some ways was that position we've just been talking about that perhaps presented the logic for your current role, the fact that you have those such a broad set of responsibilities, now joining a company with such a breadth of responsibilities, not going through the CIO position again to get there.
Right.
What is it about your background and your experience at Verizon Wireless, at Boeing, otherwise, that have suggested themselves, do you think? And what was it about those experiences that lent themselves well to you accumulating more responsibilities as your career has gone on?
I mean, I think it's, believe it or not, started really, really young, in that way, way back, you know, I started doing odd jobs and working at a very young age, you know, the traditional paper route of going out and throwing 70 newspapers every morning at 4 a.m. and then having to collect $7 from each of those 70 customers if I was going to get paid. And so I kind of had a business. You know, I had my own lawn mowing business at 15 and helped a guy run a pizza place when I was 17. So I enjoyed business and commerce from a very early age, and then married that up with teaching myself to program when I was a teenager as well. Then got into college at James Madison, where I'm headed tomorrow, and they had a terrific program, which is very rare in most universities, certainly was very rare then, called a BBA, a Bachelor of Business Administration. It's an MBA at the bachelor level, so you take the accounting, marketing, management, finance, business law, etc., but then you also choose a discipline to study, and mine was computer information systems and decision support sciences. So I took both elements of that, and it blended. So my degree coming out was a business degree, but also I had the technology angle. Got a chance then to work on an internship at the American Embassy over in London while I was in college, helping them transform their systems. But it was very much driven for what the embassy's needs were. It was not a technology need. It was how the embassy wanted to run. And then a couple of years at Accenture, they were Anderson Consulting back then. Consulting gives you a very broad background, because when you go in and you do consulting, again, it's not about the technology. It's about how you're going to help change the business. And then, of course, the time at Verizon, a few years on the landline side, a few years on broadband, 10 years on wireless. And, of course, the wireless business during those 10 years just took off like a rocket ship. It was 5 million subscribers when I got there. I think it was 60 million when I left. It's over 100 million now at Verizon. And watching the business grow, opening new stores, opening call centers, that whole growth environment, buying other companies and integrating them into the business. So even though I've been a technologist my whole life, I feel like I've been a business person my whole life as well. And those two integrated together have helped. They've helped to be a good IT leader, whether it's a CIO or whatever, but then also when these other opportunities have come up, the lens in which I view things is not a technology lens. It's a business lens. And I do think that separates successful CIOs from very successful CIOs. And the very successful CIOs are the ones who can look out at the whole business and sit down with a CFO, COO, CEO, and talk about how we're going to solve business problems. So that's kind of how it's played out. And at HP, it's perfect, because to your earlier question, Meg and I and the rest of the team, we're a technology company, but we're really trying to solve business problems and help our customers solve business problems.
It's not lost for me the earlier point that you made, which was you're only going to be as successful as the team you're building.
That's right.
And at Boeing, presumably you could not have taken on the other responsibilities if you didn't have people, as you pointed out, who could step right in your path and continue to operate at the same high quality level. And
that's
so
right.
It speaks to thinking about this as a game of chess rather than checkers, making sure you've got the foundation set, certainly the foundation technologically, making sure that all that is under your purview from a technology perspective is doing what it's supposed to be doing and reliable and all the robust, et cetera, but also having a team in place who can then step in. And so it speaks to sort of succession planning and thinking about those sorts of things.
A couple things there. One, I've always believed you need to have the right person in the right job at the right time with the right attitude. And it's all four of those. It's not two or three, it's all four. And whenever I've taken on a new responsibility, one of the first things I do is get a great team under. Find people who are better than me in particular functions or whatever, and just build a terrific team. And then find a couple of them who you can groom and grow, rotations, things, so they'll be ready to take your job. Mm-hmm. And I've always pushed hard. I've always worked hard because when I'm looking to promote somebody, one of the things I look at is, have they groomed people to take their job? So can I move them up, and then they've got a team that can move up?
Yeah.
And so I do that in my own career, but I also promote people accordingly when they do that. And I think that's the right way to run a business. And I think it really pays off.
That's excellent. You've worked for an IT executive in one form or another in three very tech-centric organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So HP, obviously, you've talked about the various ways in which Boeing is very clearly a technology company.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Verizon Wireless is very much a technology company as well. So there's a thread that runs through
mm-hmm.
those three companies, your most recent three companies that you've worked for. Obviously, very different industries otherwise. But I wonder, as you've embarked on each of those experiences, granted your most recent one was not as CIO, and so there's some differences in terms of purview as
mm-hmm.
to when you joined. Are there certain things you look at from, a people, a process, a technologies, other factors that have been common? And I'm curious also what else has been kind of unique at each stop. It's either building upon what you did last time, maybe correcting things you wish you had done a last time around.
Mm-hmm.
Can you reflect on some of those as you
sure.
think back in reverse in your career?
Yeah, culture is really important. And so whenever I've moved, whether it was from Accenture to Verizon, it was Bell Atlantic at the time, or from Verizon to Boeing or Boeing to HP, the culture of the company is really important to me. And I look for a culture that's open to change, that's open to people development. You work for a company, you also work for a person. And so in each of those cases, the person that hired me into those companies, it was very important who they were. This last case, and I think as your career progresses, that gets more and more important. So Meg Whitman is just a terrific leader at HP, and I've enjoyed her style of leadership, which is very open, very communicative, very collaborative, very good decision maker. I think some of the differences between the companies, Verizon Wireless felt like a startup. at all. I mean, we were buying companies, merging with companies, growing like crazy. And that was, you know, that was sort of one way of operating, sort of deploying technology just as fast as you could to meet up with the business demands. Boeing, very large company that produced very large machines and very sophisticated machines, airplanes, fighter jets, missiles. And that required a little more deliberate and careful pace of implementing changes because you were impacting things that, you know, people's lives depended on. Mm-hmm. And so there was a different pace there, more of an engineering focus, more of a make sure you get it right. You know, you think about the Dreamliner and, you know, the technology that helps fly and produce the Dreamliner is very, very sophisticated, but it also, as you've seen, it takes time to get it right. HP is actually sort of the perfect marriage of those two styles. It's a huge company, you know, $120 billion in revenue, 300 plus thousand employees, 170 countries around the world, thousands of products. So very big, very complex, kind of like a Boeing, but yet the spirit and the pace of change with what Meg and I and others are doing is very entrepreneurial, very fast paced. So whether it's implementing Salesforce.com for 30,000 employees in 8 months, which nobody's ever done, or getting DocuSign up and running and getting thousands of documents going there in a couple of months, or we're about to move $9 billion of procurement, services procurement work onto Fieldglass, which will be the biggest implementation of that. So a lot of these big efforts that in many companies would take multi-years, in our cases take a few months, it's combining that scale and speed. And I haven't, you know, whether it was Boeing or Verizon, the combination of those two, and I think part of the job architecture of the different functions that I have together, allow you to do that.
That's really great. I'm also curious, you mentioned the shared services, obviously, as part of your current role. Mm-hmm. In your two most recent roles, you have kind of a global purview. In Verizon Wireless, you were a division of a large multi-business unit, multi-operating mm-hmm. company organization. How in across those three, are there commonalities in terms of how you think about standardizing versus allowing different parts of the organization mm-hmm. to do things on their own, to mm-hmm. make their own decisions? How do you think about that balance? Are there certain triggers that cause you to lean in one direction versus another?
Yeah. In all three cases, IT was very centralized, which I think from a data center infrastructure perspective makes a lot of sense in any company. But also all three, we had a very business unit centric interface on what needed to get done. So at Verizon, for example, one of the jobs I had before becoming the CIO was being the CIO of the South area in Alpharetta, Georgia. And there I solid lined back to the corporate CIO and dotted lined into the business unit leader for the South area. So all the stores, call centers, P&L for the South, that gentleman ran that business. And I dotted lined him. It actually more felt like two solid lines than any kind of dotted line. And that structure of having a business unit CIO, so to speak, worked great at Verizon. I did the same thing when I got to Boeing. I set up CIOs, CIO for the Dreamliner, CIO for the 777, CIO for the helicopter division, etc. And then at HP, one of the first things I did was, okay, you know, it was all centralized, but there weren't these CIOs for the business unit. So I created a CIO for our software business, one for our services business, one for our enterprise group, and one for our personal printing and personal systems group. So I think having a centralized focus, but then having the right leaders, executives that can be connected to your key business unit leaders is what makes a big difference.
That's excellent. Lastly, as a technology leader in one of the famous and oldest, in fact, especially if you think about Silicon Valley, a foundational company in that area. I'm curious, what are some technology trends as you look out, say, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out? What particularly excites you? What do you think we will all be doing that we may not necessarily be doing today?
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons I wanted to join HP, is the 75 years of technology innovation is alive and well at HP. And in fact, last week we announced a new product that I think in the next years will revolutionize the server industry. So just a little history, if you go back to the early 80s, HP was the first company to introduce the mid-range kind of mini computer environment, sort of taking you away from the mainframe and getting you into more the mid-range mini computer mm-hmm. environment, kind of the whole Unix world. Then you get into 1989, HP was the first company to introduce x86 servers. Now, Back then, everybody said, you guys are crazy. You can't have a PC chip run a server. It can't do the workload of a mainframe, can't do the workload of a mid-range computer. Now, x86 servers are the predominant architecture, predominant workloads for the entire world. We're doing that now, once again, 24 years later, by taking cell phone, smartphone chips, ARM chips, Atom chips, and building servers out of them. And some people say we're crazy again, but in reality, what's happened is there are now more smartphones and tablets being bought than there are PCs and notebooks. And so the innovation's happening in that space. We're taking that innovation and turning that into what we call our moonshot servers, which do the same type of processing and workload as an x86 server, but it does it in roughly 90% less power, 80% less space, and it's about half the cost. Mm-hmm. So I think over the next couple of years, that'll be one innovation that you'll see is people being able to shrink their data centers, which has never happened. Data centers have just grown and grown and grown, even though computing gets more powerful. But this is the first time where you could take 10 racks of servers and do it in one and cut your power bill by 80 or 90%. So that will definitely, I think, in the next few years, and we're leading the way on that, so we're excited about it. I think mobility will continue to explode. Your mobile device will have more and more and more functionality. You can do almost everything on it today, but the next generations get better and better and better and faster, where, you know, the predominant amount of the work that you do over time will be on a mobile device. Not as much on some of the more traditional devices. There'll still be needs for PCs and notebooks for a lot of job functions, but you know, the world is growing up now on mobile devices, and I think mobility and that whole explosion is just going to continue to accelerate. Cloud computing and both where you store your information and how you access your applications, it's been a trend for the last several years. I think it's starting to accelerate. You know, I think if you think of a lot of startups now that are happening in Silicon Valley, their budget for IT infrastructure is basically zero because they just turn up everything they need on the cloud and they go. And that was not true years ago. And I think you're going to see more and more of a trend of companies being able to do all of their computing in a cloud environment, especially your small, medium business companies, and then more so as it grows. Security is going to continue to be a big challenge for companies and individuals. And you mentioned it earlier, almost any IT conference you go to now, security is a really hot topic. HP has a terrific lineup of both products and services there, but I think in the next few years you're going to see an even stronger focus on security. I was happy today to see the House pass cybersecurity legislation. We were very much supportive of that, and I think you're going to have to see more collaboration between governments and industry to help with some of these cybersecurity challenges, mm-hmm. because it's only going to get, as technology gets more sophisticated, the threats are going to get more real and sophisticated as well.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So, I mean, those are kind of, I think the final area that you're going to see a lot of innovation around is what to do with all the information that's out there, or big data as it's often mm-hmm. called, and how you process all of that, how you merge the social data that's out there with the data in your enterprise. So let's take HP as an example. You know, we have our internal databases that have our customer information, our financial information, our sales information. But then out on the web and blogs and the internet world every day, there are millions of people talking about HP products and services. You know, I just bought a printer and I like this, or I just bought a PC and this is really cool and I love the Beats Audio, whatever it may be. And we want to be able to collect all that information and then merge it back with our internal information and be able to process all of that big data. And other companies are going to have the same challenge. One of the reasons we bought Autonomy, you've heard a lot about, yes. Was to help process all of that. And then Vertica is another great product for that. So the four areas I described are also the four big bets that HP is making, because we think that's where technology is going to head over the next few years.
That's great. There is one other question I wanted to ask. Mm-hmm. I've always thought that it's kind of the best of all worlds and the worst of all worlds to be a technology company in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. But on the one hand, you have perhaps the greatest pool of talent
you
to
do.
Draw from.
Yeah.
However, they also have the best companies in the world if you're into technology to go work for.
Yeah.
And so it's an incredibly vibrant community, mm-hmm. and there's no place, arguably perhaps on Earth, where the war for talent is more acutely felt by the companies that are playing in those areas.
True. Yeah.
And how do you now, having been a leader in great cities and great areas where there's a lot of talent and a lot of companies for that matter where that talent can go to other than the one that you're at mm-hmm. and the one that you're leading, How do you think about it in this setting, especially in a technology, you know, such a tech-centric organization?
Yeah, and that's true in Silicon Valley. As you say, it's also true in almost every city around the world now, you know, whether it's Bangalore or, you know, Cyberjaya or Shanghai or wherever it may be. And that's one of the reasons that one of those four strategic goals that I place for the organization is to focus on the development of people and to be sure that we're giving them a development plan, that they're thinking about what's next for them, that they've got a great relationship with their manager and with their peers, and they're building a career. And one of the great things about HP is we're the only technology company on the planet that goes from the PC or tablet all the way to the data center and sells products and services to individuals all the way to the largest companies and governments in the world, and has such a diverse product line. So you can build a career with HP in many, many different areas. You know, you can work in the software business for a while, you can work in the hardware business, you can work in the services business, you can work in technology and operations, you can work in finance. So you can move around and build a career. You can also move around the world. So you may start out in Silicon Valley and then you may go work, like my head of HR, who worked in Singapore for 3 years, you know, or my head of shared services who's working in India right now. And so you get both a geographic diversity and opportunity within HP. You also get to work in a lot of different areas of products and services. So that's our differentiator. I think our heritage in caring for employees, you know, Bill and Dave always put employees up as a very high priority in the way they cared for them. I think our community service that we do, as we talked about earlier, that's a real draw for employees. So I think, you know, we've had pretty good success overall, especially over the last, I'd say, 6 months to a year as the company's become more stable. We set our strategy out. You know, we're delivering new products and services. We're seeing our employee retention rate go up significantly.
That's great. Well, John Hinshaw, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great having this conversation. Fantastic insights.
We got it, Peter. Thank you.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat's business is built on the power of community-driven innovation, and it's this approach that enables customers to meet the demands of today's enterprise and prepare for tomorrow's opportunities. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation and visit redhat.com today to learn more. Listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis, Calhan Kuhl, and Devin Papandreou, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.